You are listening to North Idaho News of the Week. Welcome to our program for Friday, June 12th. And I'm Jack Peterson. I'm here not with Chris Bessler, but with Will Love, journalism teacher and staff advisor for the award-winning Cedar Post at Sandpoint High School. Hi, Will.
Good morning. Happy Friday.
Yes, happy Friday.
Yeah, good to be back in the saddle. As they say.
We're gonna
with Waylon and Willie and the boys, right?
Indeed. Yeah. Yes. And the truth of the matter is this program is not live, so there won't be any up to the minute news on this show. Unfortunately, we're going to focus a little bit on sports today, and that's appropriate for a show. For Will's first show back, because Will, you are also a sportsman
Yes. And
the coach of the Sandpoint High School boys basketball team.
Correct, yeah.
And we're also pleased to be in the studio one more time with Max Oswald, who is, at the time that you're hearing this, the former sports editor of the Bonner County Daily Bee. Hi, Max. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
I guess there's some breaking news for you right there. Former sports editor of the Bonner County Daily Bee, you are you're hanging up your hat, or is that what we say?
Sure.
You're hanging up your typewriter, at least at the Daily Bee, and you're moving on to somewhere else.
Yeah, almost 3.5 years. Last day will be Wednesday, the 10th. Made the call because I got some family coming into town from the 11th to the 15th, and moving on to somewhere else in the world. Could be the East Coast, could be the Midwest. Hopefully for me, it's interior Alaska, but we'll see where life takes us.
Okay.
Where in the world is Max?
Yeah. I'll have to eventually let people know. I'll come out of hiding one day.
Are you on social media?
Yeah.
People can follow you and figure out where you actually end up going?
Yeah, a lot of, throughout the years, I've had a lot of people contact and friend me through Facebook specifically, so... Got a lot of news through Facebook. A lot of people like using that social media platform.
Yeah. 3.5 years, you've kind of, you've made a lot of changes and a lot of progress at the sports desk, I think, for the Daily Bee. Without casting any aspersions on the sports writers who came before, I think you really did a lot to shape that, the sports page into, you know, something that people rely on and covers all the high school sports on reliability is, I think,
sure,
a good word for your impact there.
Yeah, I'd like to think so. When I had originally first started, it was kind of a blank slate, so really got to do whatever I wanted with it. Position was in and out of hands for a long time before... You know, obviously there is great sports editors like Mark Nelke. He did about 20 years. And then Eric Plummer, I think, did between 13, 14 years. And even Dylan Green was here for about 3 years, some pretty notable guys. But it was a big transition. Just there had been a long while, maybe 2 years, of where there was three different people in and out or sometimes spans where nobody was in the position. So really did make it all my own.
Yeah.
In a sense. And, you know, there's always things you're going to reflect on and look back on. Wish you did a little bit more. Wish you did a little bit less. Wish you did, you know, X, Y, Z. But I look back on it and very thankful for the opportunity to be a part of this community. Really nothing like it. Very charitable place.
The Daily Bee is an interesting paper. There's a lot of tends to have a young staff.
Mm-hmm.
You came right out of college, right?
Pretty much. I'd worked in higher ed human resources for about a year and did some consultant work. And one day just said, all right, I'm going to pack everything up in a car and I'm going to go somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
This is where it ended up being. I didn't know anything about the housing before moving here. I was in Butte, Montana, and I still didn't have housing. And as I was crossing the border, got a phone call that, hey, like, you were second in line, but now you're first for this studio. And I literally moved in that night.
Yeah.
Like, on the day of the call, moved in that night. And we had got there at, like, 8 p.m. And he's like, yeah, come in and view the property. And we viewed it. He's like, okay, so when do you want to move in? I'm like, no.
Yeah.
I'm just, that's just how it worked out. But yeah, in regard to the young staff, a lot of people right out of college.
Well, and it creates, I mean, it's trial by fire sort of. And you get, mm-hmm. you're thrown in as sports editor without, you don't get to kind of work your way up under a senior right. sports editor who already has the contacts and everything. You're kind of, okay, now your job is to tell us about sports in the paper. Here's the phone number to the athletic director. Mm-hmm. Go write the story, you know. I mean, yeah, so you do kind of get to, you kind of created your own style. The paper is very reflective of your style and your tastes, I guess, or your work habits.
Seems crazy to say, but everything that was done, there is only my eyes on it. And, well, yeah, everything that was being produced was solely by me and created by me. And thankfully, I've been here long enough to create an extensive, you know, Rolodex and spreadsheets of, you know, different lists and things to look out for, upcoming stories, features, you know, all that stuff. It's all already been documented and sent off, ready to go for the next guy.
Mm-hmm. Jack, I was a young sports reporter, also a young news reporter, general news reporter, when I first got out of college, and I can understand how overwhelming and how like life just kind of flies at you, especially when you're like learning that you're going to be moving into a place the day that you arrive in town. One of the things that I always thought was great and what I appreciated about you is your research that you put in. And so there was a lot of times that I know that you'd have to probably go back and look into the archives to find like records and stuff like that. So just kind of talk about the process that you went through as you started sports editor here in Sandpoint. And then how did it kind of transition? Where did you end up as you're leaving?
I'll say the internet is a remarkable place to get information, but beyond that, the biggest, I owe it all to the community to really on a lot of this research stuff. I mean, there are old records in a lot of the filing cabinets, but when you're creating the relationships with the community, you get those guys that have been here for 30, 40, 50 years or been with the program for such a long time. They're so comfortable with you, and they'll send you a text message saying, hey, like, you know, this happened in 2006, and now it's happening for the first time again here. And so I guess in that sense, it was much harder in the beginning to get these sort of tidbits of information. Obviously, there's archives of the paper itself, but, you know, those archives, even the online versions, I don't even know if they exist past 2015, at least in a reliable way. So, yeah, I guess TLDR is, I owe a lot of that, the research aspect, to the community. I mean, people have, there's a lot of people here that just have a lot of knowledge of the area and are very invested in sports, and I appreciated their help over the years.
Mm-hmm. Well, you made yourself available to those people, to the public to reach out to you and let you know what you didn't know, which isn't always easy, especially for somebody who's writing, you know, to just be like, here, critics, here's my phone number. You know, what I get wrong. That's a tough thing to do, but,
try to open myself up as much as possible.
Yeah.
But, sometimes it can't always, give a response to everyone. And so if anyone has ever felt wronged by me, I apologize, but you know, that's just how it goes in life.
I think one of the toughest parts in sports writing is that there's all these people that are part of an event, a part of a meet, part of a game and stuff like that. And, you know, one of the things that we learn in journalism is that we need to try to find the story, because if we just recited all the facts and stuff like that, that wouldn't be necessarily the most interesting way to sell a newspaper. Mm-hmm. And so just kind of talk about, you know, that process that you went through in trying to find the stories within the games. And then also, you know, the reality is people get upset about that too, mm-hmm. even if the team wins.
Right. Might be a. I often thought that when you made, I call them kind of a gamer feature, you know, when you go really in depth on one of those district championship games and you maybe focus in on one specific player and their storyline, that, yeah, maybe there are some ruffled feathers per se. It didn't happen too often, you know, believe it or not. But finding that story, you know, you really have to be there in person. I didn't stray away in person entirely, but with the use of online technology, the role has also become a lot easier in that sense. And
well, you also have to cover three other high schools.
Yeah,
too.
I mm-hmm. you know,
or two other.
There's mm-hmm. been times where I don't know if anyone can really imagine how much I was doing at one point, or like keeping track of things, and. I actually, to really answer that question, is I actually wish I had done more features. There's just not enough time in a day to keep yourself sane. So doing those sort of gamer feature things, where you're going to find those tidbits, I always, if you don't have a good relationship with the coaches, you're not going to be able to make it work. And found a lot of cool information and to make these, as I call them, gamers, like more featurey. And yeah, if you're button heads with these coaches, you're not going to get that extra piece of information. And I think that answers it. I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're the one usually asking the questions, right?
Yeah, I am usually asking the questions. You know, and you'd be surprised how much you've just like having a conversation at random and find out something like totally like awesome. And I know I had... Every time I would go up to the high school, I'd always see Paul Kent. He's on the cross country and track at Sandpoint. And just being able to talk to him over the years, I know he had some problems with his health and then made this big comeback and had a tremendous track and field season. It was stuff like that that I wish I had done maybe more writing about. And
KRF Y's own Paul mm-hmm. Kent, CP at 3.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I've talked about that with him before, but yeah. You'd be surprised how your conversations, like genuine conversations with people, how much cool things you can find out. We're kind of straying away from this like interpersonal communication, and it's kind of hard for me to process. But it's a very public facing, student facing, school administration facing role. So thankful to have done this job, because you literally have to talk to people every day. There's no choice.
As you reflect back on these 3.5 years, what's been the game or match or something that you look back on and go, man, that was cool to be a part of?
I believe it's, you know, it just happened, but really the state championship baseball run was super cool to cover. And those, I watched all the state championship games from the desk at the Daily Bee, and those were some of the most bizarre, high-scoring, you know, energetic games ever. And for Sandpoint to win it all for the first time in 20 years, that was a fun storyline to keep track of. And beyond that, there's been so much. It's actually crazy how successful the sports are around here, and you even get a team like, you know, Sandpoint football this past year. In 3-7 the year prior, a lot of question marks coming into the season. Everyone thinks it's going to be a down year. They come out and, what do they go, 8-3. It's just, it's small town stuff like that, that's really fun. If I had to focus in on one game, there's been a lot of girls district hoops games that were kind of crazy. And remember when Jordan Tomko had scored, I think Brecken Meyer had gotten injured. Jordan kind of, everyone's like, well, Lakeland's amazing. Like, how is this going to be possible? Like, we have to win. And Jordan, like, came out and scored, like, 35 for Sandpoint to clinch it. I just thought that was, you know, crazy. And even there's a district game where Brecken had scored, like, 35 of her own against Lewiston. I mean, this, to have the performances and moments like that is something that's really important to have in a small town newspaper. Of course, you know, hard to mention all the sports. There's been at least one thing in every sport that's just been really cool. And track and field's been wildly successful. I mean, Priest River Baseball, I mean, you talk about a program that maybe, now I'm not sure of the exact record, but over the last 4 years might have been, went 1-70. And now they're coming out second in the Central Idaho League and posted a huge winning record this season. I think it was around 14-7. Like, it's cool to see smaller schools like that have success too. Like, there was, like, in the past, there wasn't a storyline for Priest River Baseball. Like, now there is. Like, Priest River Football has been good, like, which has honestly made my job a bit tougher to follow all this stuff because everyone's doing so good and successful. You want to give everyone the right coverage. And, yeah, I've just been amazed at how much good stuff's happening around here. That was a long-winded version, but...
Should we talk a little about, I don't know, the spring season? It's been a long time. We had all this politics coverage kind of dominating the airwaves. We haven't had Max in here since, I think, wintertime.
Mm-hmm.
The big headline is Sandpoint Baseball. Would you say, is that story number one? If you're making your spring wrap-up edition in the Daily B, that's probably number one.
Yeah, yeah. 117 straight to end the year. 17 in a row, 25-2, all under a new head coach. Now, I know the foundation had been set years prior. There's a huge senior class this season. But when you have, you know, four or five kids batting over 400, that's pretty remarkable. You don't really see that stuff every so often. And people, I think it opened up a lot of eyes to people outside of the PNW, even of like how successful some of these schools in Idaho are, and they can really compete with a lot of these bigger states.
Well, did you just say they were hitting over 400?
They had a couple. Four or five kids batting over 400. Yeah,
is that unusual in high school sports?
You know, I'd say the baseball averages always skew a little bit higher in high school, but no, that is definitely abnormal in a good way.
Yeah,
and you know, obviously, pitcher senior by the name of Sage Medeiros. I mean, I think he posted a 10-0 win-loss record with an 0.76 ERA and 80-plus strikeouts. I mean, you just, Spokane Community College cannot be happy enough to have a player like him because I know that he has had other interests and offers for certain, and to stick close to home, yeah, that's going to be a name to look out for. Hopefully the college notebook tradition of keeping up with the athletes stays in the Daily B. He'll be a name to look out for in one of those.
Cool. Well, I think one of the things that's impressive when you take a look at it is that it's not easy to win a state championship in baseball because, you know, you've got your top pitcher and you've got your second pitcher, but they really had to rely on actually like JV kids in that state championship game to claim the title.
Yeah. I believe sophomore Blake Bogotti came in during this, you know, what would be the would-be state championship game. You know, if Sandpoint won it, like, they won it. If they lost, they would have played another. But I think Blake had only pitched maybe one varsity game, maybe versus Bonner's Ferry the whole year. He comes in and throws a clean inning. I mean, that's, you can't really ask for much more than that. And yeah, relying on those fourth, fifth pitchers, I mean, that really makes or breaks, like, the state championship. It's, it was crazy to see all their success this year, you know, both in the batter's box and on the mound. I'm not sure if I ever seen anything like it. The dominant nature of, I mean, it's not often that Sandpoint's like, yeah, we went down to Lakeland and, you know, we outscored them 50-5 in a doubleheader because that's seriously what the scores were. It was a crazy year.
Now, not to be understated, but the boys track team also had a tremendous year.
Right.
And we had some fast kids, which isn't usually the case for Sandpoint to have that many fast kids.
No, I was even talking with someone the other day. He had sprinted for Meade and Whitworth, and we're just kind of talking about North Idaho sprinters. And like, yeah, you know, Sandpoint ran like a 41.47 in the 4x1 the other day. He's like, really? Like, what? Because like, I had done some research of my own. That is faster than the College of Idaho's time this year. So
really?
Yeah, by about 0.13. So I thought that was a good way to explain it, just how fast they were this year, you know, breaking a state classification record in the 4x1. And, you know, the 4x2 record has been broken. Maverick Gomez has broken the 100 and 200 meters records countless times. I know there were some, you know, track influencers on social media in like California, and they saw that Maverick up here in Sandpoint and ran like a 10.55 to win it all. And they're like, they have kids in Idaho running 10.5. Like, it's crazy just how good boys track was this year, and especially in the sprints. But even boys basketball player Knox Williams broke a very long-standing 400-meter dash record. I think he finished with 49.82. That's off the top of my head, so maybe a couple decimals off. But it's just a junior, too. I mean...
Yeah, I mean, typically, wow. You have to do well in the sprints to win a state title, but... Sandpoint had Paul Kent and, you know, and Hayden Peterson, you know, just talk about the depth that they also had as a team.
Yeah. You know, Kai Budenseek, just a sophomore, and then Paul, a senior in the distance. They're both podiumed in both the 1600 and the 3200. I believe they were in a couple events. They even had personal bests, all time bests. And then Hayden Peterson, he just threw 165 feet in the javelin, and it's been a long, well, I mean, it's only the second year the javelin's been reinstated into the actual, like, state championships and districts postseason, all that. So, this will air Friday. So, of course, Daily Beat Athlete of the Week this week is Hayden Peterson. He was looking into it earlier today. He improved his javelin by over 40 feet since last year. So imagine you don't have a kid like that that's putting in a ton of work, because you don't just improve 40 feet overnight. And that's really what made the difference in the final scoring. There's a freshman by the name of Clayton Ernst, and I believe he was fourth in the triple jump. You don't see freshmen triple jumping 43 feet very often. So I believe he had moved into the school recently. So, you know, tremendous addition. And
yeah, he's a basketball player too. And we're really excited to have him. Yeah.
Yeah, tremendous depth this year. And even on the girls' side, Elizabeth Storms winning a state title, breaking the school record in the 800 meter run. So many storylines in track. It's, you know, Aaliyah Howard as a senior placing in three different events. You don't see that too often. You don't get that every year in track and field.
Hey, Jack.
Yes, Will.
Did you know that Sandpoint High School might have the most dominant
Esports?
Tennis player?
Oh, tennis. Mm-hmm. Oh, of course.
In the Northwest, right?
73-0 and 25-0 this season. Yeah, Pepper Rickert. I mean... Yeah, I think I'll say this. literally, she's so dominant to the point that opponents would tear up against her. I mean, it is seriously that level of dominance, to the point where she's, I believe, all besides one match this year, she won 6-0. There was almost a lot of games where nobody even scored a single point against her. It was like 15-0, 30-0, 40-0, done. The game. Like, that's really... There's so much you could say, but she's definitely probably the most dominant player in the history of Idaho tennis. If I had to give my opinion on it.
Yeah. So a question for you then that you might not know the answer to is who then does she play to at the same skill level as her? I mean, is she playing when she's not playing for the high school team? Is she practicing with adults and college players and things like that?
She'll travel all over to Florida, California, a lot of East Coast stuff,
A lot of tennis players like her don't traditionally play high school tennis.
Correct. Mm-hmm.
And why does she play high school tennis?
She plays high school tennis because she's coached by her grandfather, and all of her family lives here in the area. It was actually had been rumors that she wasn't going to stick with the high school, but she has ended up sticking with the high school. I believe she really loves it and will continue to look to get that four-peat next year. Typically, yeah, for a player of this level, you'd see them going a, you know, boarding school, homeschool route and competing all over the country, which she still does in addition to the high school. But, you know, she is ranked second in the entire Pacific North or Northwest region. I believe that that includes Idaho, Washington, Oregon, Montana, and Alaska. So it might be Wyoming too. But yeah, she'll go to these competitions. She'll still win a lot of them, but they have a 3, 4, 5 star level players, they'll call them. And then they'll also have blue chip players. I believe she's a 4-star recruit as per tennisreporting.net. But, you know, she'll go to these competitions, play doubles with other really high level competitors in Seattle. And you'll see closer scores. It'll be like 6-3, 6-4, a couple 3-setters. And that's where she's really, a lot of that stuff I'd say happens in Florida and California.
I mean, it'll be interesting to see what happens with her career as a tennis player going forward after high school. When is this a name that we're going to become familiar with? You know,
you'll hear her name long beyond the high school years, most likely. And well, she already faced the same person 3 times in the state championship the last 3 years from Hillcrest, and had defeated her 6-1, 6-1 all 3 years, or some variation of 6-1, 6-0, assuming that'll probably be the matchup next year as well.
Yeah.
And that, I think that actually is a testament to the other players' dominance, that she reached a state championship game every year since her freshman year, and then Pepper's just really that good.
Yeah.
So.
Well.
Yeah, tennis, with her winning the state championship, I want to say they were 5th. This year as a team. So it's tremendous to see a program that's been built up like that over the years. You know, you don't typically think of like tennis and like Pacific Northwest, like Montana, Idaho. So definitely putting a standpoint on the map.
Time is flying by, as it always does when we start talking about sports, because we try to cram so much into one of these little half hour shows. I would ask, since Will is here, since Max is here, and when this airs, Max is no longer the sports reporter for the Daily Bee. You can now ask Coach Love anything you want without worrying about like burning bridges or anything like that. Are there any questions you are always afraid to ask him for fear that you might lose your contact information?
No, I don't think so.
Yeah.
Not with Will. You know, I've had a tremendous relationship with all the coaches. You know, you'll get into some hiccups here and there, but there never has been any, like, lingering questions. You know, we've been talking before the show. The only thing I say is it takes a lot to be a coach in today's environment. It takes a lot to just be an employee of a high school or any school district for that matter. And every day that I work, I always say that these people deserve a ton of respect, and especially in small towns. These people are dedicating their lives to much more than this, to something beyond themselves. And I think that's very admirable. And we should be looking up to coaches as role models in life. Most coaches, that is. You never, sometimes here and there, you never know. But this stuff is tough. It's hard. And I've enjoyed working with Sandpoint and other school districts throughout the last 3.5 years, because honestly, it's not easy coming into the community as a quote-unquote outsider per se, but everyone's been extremely welcoming, and the product has become what it's become, or I should say the sports section has become what it's become at the Daily Bee because of the community. I'll take a little bit of credit, but it's really about the people that are involved that you aren't seeing or hearing about sometimes that are really putting in the legwork to, you know, help you out and get things done. It's so, yeah, if I had to end it there, like, just wow. Yeah, I remember the other Daily Bee reporter we used to have, Eric Welch, and he told me after he left, he said, most charitable community he's ever been in, and this guy has traveled extensively for a young individual. So mm-hmm. I thought he summed it up really nicely when he said that. So people are putting in a lot more hours and time than you can possibly believe in these sports-oriented small-town rules.
Yeah. Well, I'd add on to what you said about coaches there, just that I think it's a harder job than I have come to the belief that it's probably harder to be a high school coach than it is to be a professional coach, although the remuneration is not the same
equivalent.
But yeah. No, but I think you get the kids you get. You know, I mean, you don't get to go out and you don't get to have a draft.
There's no portal for us.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you don't build your team to your own specifications. You have the kids that come up and you're teaching them how to be. I mean, in your case, you're teaching them how to act as young men in the world as a boys coach. And then
if I had to add something to that. You might see in other states long travel, maybe comparable to Montana, but the travel time associated with this state of Idaho and how it all works is something that a lot of people cannot comprehend. I mean, days away from family, you're traveling to Lewiston for a league game and you got to do a 6-hour round trip. This stuff is unheard of in other parts of the world.
On a Tuesday night.
I mean, seriously, yeah. Thursday night, on a Saturday afternoon even, you're giving up your Saturdays, maybe even not getting home till Sunday. I mean, I grew up in a more small rural county, but we had 15 high schools in the county in Coal Region, Pennsylvania. The longest we ever traveled was 1 hour.
Yeah.
I mean, to put that in perspective of also what, you know, coaches are traveling down to these state meets in Idaho Falls. I mean, seriously, it's a lot of devotion, dedication.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. Well, it's now past our time. Did we get everything we wanted out of Max? Will kind of asked earlier. You kind of answered the question. I was going to ask you what was your favorite game that you ever attended while you were here as a reporter, which you kind of talked about that a little bit.
There's been too many really to give a good answer. You know, the one game this past football year when Brock Yarbrough also plays boys basketball had 2 100-yard interception returns. I've never seen that, and I never heard of that ever. And I've looked at a lot of sports stuff because I love memorizing and looking at other states' geography and sports. I've never heard of it before. That's something I'll probably remember. And, you know, when I'm like 85, I'll be like, one time I was down here in Sanpoint, Idaho, this kid had 2 100-yard interception returns in a game. Like, that's something that lives with you for a long time.
Yeah.
So if I had to pick, Sanpoint versus Lake City at home, big win after, you know, it was – kind of some feuds between the schools, and that was just a real fun.
Max, thank you so much for coming in. Thanks for coming in unpaid all this time as a volunteer to be a broadcaster here at KRFY. We've appreciated having your input. You're the only sports reporter that we've ever that we've ever had on the air. And now I guess that's going to be Jack Freeman's job, and he has big shoes to fill. But I know Jack's going to be great, but it's but you have made quite an impact here, I think, in the community, and you'll be missed. We'll be watching what you do going forward.
Thanks, Jack. Yeah, all the best to KRFY. I mean, tremendous station to be a part of and to listen to. Really wish more people were involved with their community radio and community newspapers. Extremely important, in my opinion. And wherever I end up, I am subscribing to the local newspaper and listening to the local radio station.
Cool. Well, there we go. That's what we like to hear. That's how it starts, right? The movement builds from there. Will, anything we need to say in closing before we sign this thing off?
Go Spurs.
Yeah, go, right.
That's keep right. That. Yeah, we won't know the outcome, or we don't currently know the outcome, but there will be have been two more games.
One more game Wednesday night.
Okay.
Take a couple days off.
Okay.
Yeah. So I'm actually a Hurricanes fan for the Stanley Cup as well. So we'll find out more about that coming up too.
We're going to find out. Yeah,
that is actually a busy time for sports.
It is. Yeah, there's the It's nice to see that the finals are not going to be a sweep for the Knicks, at least. It's, you know, the Spurs came back the other day. We'll see what happens. Okay. Thanks again, everybody, for listening to this slightly unusual edition of North Idaho News of the Week. Wrapping things up with Max Oswald, the outgoing sports editor of the Bonner County Daily Bee. Thanks again, Max.
Thank you.
And thanks, Will.
Thank you.